The date is November 15th, 1996, and we're watching Space Jam. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Michael Jordan to my Bill Murray.
I was hoping I was going to get, I had this thing prepared where I was going to get to be Bugs Bunny, but it's alright.
Oh, okay.
Michael Jordan works too, so. Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
We can do a take two on that if you want. Okay.
It's fine. Michael Jordan. I shouldn't blast Michael Jordan. I mean, he is the greatest basketball player of all time. I shouldn't be offended. I have to, of all people, be equated
I
to
know,
Michael
like,
Jordan.
Oh, man, what a rough comparison.
Yeah.
And so this week we are celebrating the release of the new movie starring Don Cheadle and LeBron James, Space Jam: A New Legacy. So we brought back a friend of ours that has experience in voice work. You'll be hearing him as Ryder in next month's Paw Patrol the movie. Please welcome back for the third time, Will Brisbane. Hey, how's it going?
Excited to be back. I am doing great. How about you guys?
Doing very well.
Yeah, doing wonderful. And so, I mean, you are, I've been seeing you've got pictures being taken of you now. You're really launching into your full publicity side of this movie that you're going to be in, eh?
Totally, yeah. I just had an editorial photo shoot like last month and then was in recording some promo stuff. And yeah, so it's getting pretty hyped up now.
And now that you have actually been able to reveal your role, because anyone that doesn't know, Will appeared in our Land Before Time episode and our Who Framed Roger Rabbit episode. And at that time, he was sworn to secrecy who he's playing. But now that everyone knows that you are the leader of the Pops, that you are Ryder in the Paw Patrol movie, what's it been like for you with outpouring of love?
It's been pretty awesome. Yeah, I'm just living the dream. It's always been my dream to, you know, have the publicity and stuff. It's always been a big goal and dream of mine. So it's pretty awesome to see it starting to come to fruition, getting some recognition there from a bunch of people. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, right. Nice. On.
I mean, forgive me for my lack of Paw Patrol awareness. My daughter isn't really in that age category yet. But so is he like the alpha dog?
He's like the kid who like can like. He's like the owner of all of them, and he like controls them. He's the leader.
Yeah, the nice. the human consultant, if you will. If this was Charlie's Angels, Ryder is Charlie.
Okay.
And he's got all his puppy angels around him. It's weak, but it's what I came up with on the fly there.
Nice.
So this week we're looking back at November 1996 when the movies and theaters were Ransom, Santa with Muscles, Romeo and Juliet, High School High, and of course, our movie for today, Space Jam, which earned $250.2 million on an $80 million budget.
And as always, we are going to be slam dunking on you big time with spoilers. So if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, "Together, they just might save the world."
That's almost like the tagline for Paw Patrol.
But it may not be the best description of this movie, so let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
All right. When the owner of an intergalactic amusement park sets his sights on the Looney Tunes to be his new star attraction, Bugs and crew decide to contest their fate by challenging their diminutive captors to a basketball game. The tables turn when the monsters steal the talents of some of the NBA's greatest players and become the Monstars. With their freedom at stake, the Toons turn to retired basketball phenom turned mediocre baseball player Michael Jordan for help. Will the Waskowy Wabbit and Air Jordan be able to find a way to lead the Toon squad to victory? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Right on. So let's jump over to our special guest because, you know, I know that you were born after this movie came out by probably about a decade. What is your experience with Space Jam?
Well, I mean, I've always been a big sports guy. So I actually had this, I have the DVD copy of this movie at my house. I watched a bunch as a kid because I was super into like Looney Tunes and all of them. I always watched it on whatever channel had it on the TV. I think it was like Retro Tune or something, but I always really was into that. And then this was just a really great movie that I watched all the time. And yeah, I still love it to this day. Watching it again to prepare for this episode, I was pretty happy the whole way through.
And did you know that this movie is based on a series of commercials that Michael Jordan did with Bugs Bunny?
I actually did not know that, no.
That's where it all started, is it started with a series of commercials, and someone at Warner Brothers went, hey, I think there's a movie in that. So now we've got Space Jam.
That's actually awesome.
What about you, Colin? What's your experience with Space Jam?
I have a long history with Space Jam, actually. I didn't prepare Sean for this, but I have a story to tell you guys that will tell you about my experience with Space Jam. So,
okay.
So I'm going to take you back to fifth grade, Routier Elementary School in Falaire, Alberta. I was 10 years old, and it's probably like a Monday at lunchtime, and me and some buddies are talking about, you know, what movies we watched the last weekend. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends, Josh, I think probably was like, oh, you know, like, I saw Space Jam. It was awesome. Colin, have you seen it? And I was like, yeah, man, I've seen Space Jam. Not only did I see it, I own it. My mom bought it for me. Try to, you know, get some street cred.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
That'll do it.
So then, like, we go back to our classes. We're learning whatever you learn in the fifth grade. And then just before recess, my fifth grade teacher comes to me and is like, oh, Colin, I heard that you have Space Jam. I think it would be really fun for, you know, the rest of the kids in the class to be to watch it. Like, I was planning a movie day, you know, as you do when they pull the big card in. And
so many of your stories involve like movie day in your classrooms.
Exactly.
This is like three or four now. Okay. Yeah,
exactly. So she's like
AV cart.
Yeah. So she's like, so I heard you have it. Do you think you could bring it? And I'm like, oh, yeah, for sure, Miss Seymour, I could bring it, for sure I can. She's like, when are you planning? And she's like, well, I think it'll be like Thursday, so it's Monday, it's Thursday. I was like, okay, but then I go home because it turns out I actually lied. I don't have Space Jam. I do not own Space Jam. I've never seen Space Jam at this point. So I'm on my bus ride home, and I'm trying to devise a plan of like how I'm going to get this movie to save face. Because I don't want to become the laughing stock of my elementary school. And I'm like, well, I have like 3 days to figure it out. And I grew up on a farm in the middle of nowhere. There's like three towns, but they're all like within 30 to 45 minutes from where our farm is. So I go to my mom and I kind of explain to her. I don't think I explained to her that I lied. I'm just like, Mom, I really want to watch this movie Space Jam. Do you think you can find it? And she's like, well, I don't know, like, you know, VHS tapes were pretty expensive in the day. So she's like, well, you know, maybe if I see it. And then so Tuesday, no go, don't have the tape. Wednesday comes around, no go, don't have the tape. And so Wednesday night I'm like freaking out because I'm like, I don't have, like, I can't, what do I show up with? Do I just show up with nothing? Do I just show up and be like, oh, I forgot it, sorry, I forgot it today, like, and try to stall for longer?
Or but show then, up with so, a broken VHS tape. You could have done that, gone and smashed a blank VHS.
Yeah. So anyways, Wednesday night, I'm forced to come clean to my mom. And so my mom's like, bless her soul, she's like, okay, well, I'll go look for it. Like, she'll go to like a grocery store or whatever, wherever in our town sold videotapes and see if she could find it.
Yeah.
So Thursday morning, I got on the bus and like all day, I'm just like tense. Because, like, I have no idea if this tape is going to make it. Time is ticking down because we're going to watch it after lunch. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just sweating. And people are asking me, like, oh. And I think, actually, my teacher asked me if I had brought it because she wanted to look at it, make sure the rating or whatever was good. And I told, oh, I forgot it, but I'll call my mom and see if she can bring it or whatever. And so that was kind of my backstory. But anyway, so then I go call my mom. Turns out she found it. She shows up at lunchtime with this tape. And I was like the happiest I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, the day was saved. It's like the end of, I don't know, Fast and the Furious or whatever, when they pull off a heist, or Ocean's 11. I haven't seen that movie, but I assume the heist and everything goes well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, just instant relief, happiness. So good. So yeah. So then we get Space Jam. We watch Space Jam. I know nothing about basketball at this point. I know who Michael Jordan is, obviously, but I know nothing about basketball. The movie was fine, but it was a tense point of my life. And that lie is synonymous with my feelings about Space Jam and has been ever since.
Well, now you've come clean.
Yeah, for anybody who I went to fifth grade with, now you know the true story.
Well, I think a great end to that story, though, would have been, but it still had the cellophane on it, and so everyone knew I was lying.
It did have the cellophane on it, but when I went and picked it up at the office, I pulled it off before I got back to my classroom.
Right on. Well, on that note, let's jump into Space Jam, directed by Joe Pitka. It's produced by, there are 17 different producers listed on this movie, because all the animation gets its own separate producers. It seems like the main one, though, is Ivan Reitman, and it's written by Leo Benvenuti, Steve Rudnick, Timothy Harris, and Herschel Weingrod. I know we've seen some of those names before in other episodes that we've had. And we open with the flashback to 1973 when Michael Jordan was a young child shooting hoops in the backyard, and I Believe I Can Fly is playing. Let's talk music here for a second. Between this song and Fly Like an Eagle and the Space Jam theme, which takes place during one of the longest sports montage credit sequences ever, there are definitely some huge songs in this movie, and I completely forgot that all these songs came from this movie. Well, Space Jam. That one's obvious, but...
Yeah. I mean, I Believe I Can Fly, I think, is... I totally forgot that was even a song with everything happening with R. Kelly.
I've
kind of pushed all his music to the back of my mind.
Yeah, no, but it did make some... Like, Fly Like an Eagle is a great song. It's like on my playlist. I still listen to it. I very much like that song. I actually didn't know that it was like... Was it written for the movie?
That I don't know.
Okay.
I Believe I Can Fly was written for the movie. I believe it won an Oscar for, like, best original song or whatever.
Because I see what you mean. It could be, like, All-Star in Shrek, and that one was definitely not written for the movie. That one existed beforehand. It launched Smash Mouth into the realms of superstardom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Smash Mouth, what happened to them? But you know, I did notice, though, one of the listed credits, I had no idea about this song. When Charles Barkley is like all sad and he joins in on the girls' basketball team playing, there's the one song called Basketball Jones, and it's written by Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
And performed by Barry White and Chris Rock. What?
I've only ever heard the version of that song, like the actual Cheech and Chong one, like Basketball Jones, I got a basketball. Like, yeah, I didn't know it was performed by Chris Rock in the movie, though.
That's embarrassing that I didn't know that was a Cheech and Chong song before. So I guess that's an album I don't remember.
Yeah, I did not know that was Cheech and Chong. That's the song that's like Basketball Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a Basketball Jones.
Yeah, and you got Barry White going, oh, yeah.
For whatever reason, I could have swore that song was sung by women.
Well, the background is.
Yeah, I thought it was. I always thought it was like a TLC or something, like a band like that. That's funny. I also made a mistake. I Believe I Can Fly didn't win an Oscar. It won a Grammy for Best Original Film Song.
Oh, okay. Okay, so now, like, this opening scene, the whole exchange with his dad where he's adamant about just one more, and then seconds later he's like, okay, shoot till you miss. But dad says it's after midnight, yet he comes out fully dressed, for one. But really, like, would even the coolest dad in the world be okay with getting woken out of bed after midnight?
That's what it takes to win.
Yeah. I mean, Michael must have been doing something right. All those late night practices go down as best athlete ever.
Yeah.
Arguably.
There was something about this scene that really, well, and also kind of the whole movie, actually, that I don't think I ever picked up on when I first watched it. But I feel like this movie goes to a lot of lengths to justify him leaving the NBA to play baseball.
Like the one line where he says, I've only told one person this during his press conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even when he's telling his dad, like, I want to be a baseball player just like you. And his dad says, that's a real sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you were the greatest basketball player of all time. You're telling me basketball is not a real sport.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. But after baseball, you're going to fly, huh? Like, is this a reference to Air Jordan, or is this foreshadowing for his impossibly long jump at the end? The fact that they lean so much into flying.
I think just Michael Jordan in general, you know, the slam dunk from the free throw line, he kind of took the mantle of, like, Michael can fly, like, through his whole career.
Yeah.
Air Jordan, he can fly, all that. So I think the movie leaned in that direction, yeah, just totally emphasized that, like, he's, like, not human.
Yeah, and they definitely liked making sure that all his nicknames were said at one point or another with, like, his royal airness and all those different things.
I think that line was purely foreshadowing for the opening credits because, A, I don't believe that kid made that dunk, for one.
Well, yeah.
We can dispute that if you want.
No, but, no, he didn't.
But, but yeah, then the credits is literally just a dunk reel, so I think that mm-hmm. that might have just been foreshadowing for that.
Yeah, it's like a 4-minute Michael Jordan sizzle reel is what it is, and like his whole career. Yeah, let's get into the basketball of it all. Like, can I start by saying, I would watch an entire movie of just Charles Barkley, Muggsy Bogues, Patrick Ewing, Sean Bradley, and Larry Johnson going through their seances and psychiatrists and stuff. Mm-hmm. I would watch that movie over and over again. Like, stretch that out to an hour and a half.
Yeah, there's a good B movie happening, a good director's cut to be had.
Yeah, like everything they did during their little existential crisis was hilarious. Like the montage bit of the doctors trying to figure out what their ailments are, and we get the sight gag of Muggsy walking through the door while everyone else hits their heads. Like, just everything that they were doing.
It was just great chemistry, for sure, among the, because they're all, like, best friends probably off the court in the off season for sure, like Barkley and Jordan and all that. So it probably wouldn't have been hard to have the chemistry. So, yeah, I think that's definitely how it's so good, all those parts.
Well, and that's one thing I am wondering, is how autobiographical is this movie? Like, are Michael Jordan and Larry Bird really chummy?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I wasn't sure of that, but when I watched The Last Dance, like the Michael Jordan documentary, like they're like
epic.
Him and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, those are like best friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
I do think Muggsy had one of my favorite lines, though, out of these guys, when they're all sitting around at the end and he says, "Well, at least you guys are tall. I'm nothing now, just another short guy."
Me and my wife were talking about Muggsy Bogues because I always thought like he was just short comparatively, but he's actually, I think, like 5'4 or something like that.
Oh, like, see, I thought it was like 5'7, 5'8. I thought it was a little, I could be wrong. I mean, yeah, I know what you mean, though. Like, it feels like, is he just 6 feet tall and that makes him seem tiny when you've got Larry Bird at 6'9 standing next to him?
Right.
You
know? Yeah, he's 5'3.
Yeah, he's 5'3.
Oh, geez. Okay.
He could still dunk.
Yeah.
I know. Like, it's kind of crazy to think he would actually, like, what would you call it? Like, pound for pound, he has to be, like, one of the best basketball players ever. Yeah.
Oh, and everyone loves him.
Based solely on his height.
With his height, like, he just had to have, like, such raw athleticism to be able to not only keep up, but outshine most.
Yeah, because he's one of those guys you can even talk about with, like, an asterisk beside it, where it's like, well, Muggsy Bogues didn't do as well as this person, but come on, he came close, and he's 5'3". Like, it's always got that extra add-on that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will say, too, that the, like, I love these five guys, but man, any other time they cut to a basketball player, it was painful. Like, the guys that have to change in the hallway at the Forum, like, it was like Mike Modano in Mighty Ducks.
Yes. Yeah, no, I felt some of those parts, like you mentioned, they just kind of went on a bit too long, and the comedic effects just didn't hit. And so it's kind of just like, okay, can we get back to the movie now?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got the one Eastern European player that was in the movie there, where his line was just like, you could tell it was painful for him to deliver, too.
I'm pretty sure that might have been Tony Kukoc, like from...
The Lakers?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking it could have been.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or it says, I'm on like the IMDb, and it says Vlade Divac from the Sacramento Kings. It could have been him, too, because that sounds... European.
That sounds Eastern European. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering after if this movie holds some sort of record for the most characters who just play themselves.
That's what I was wondering too, or something, you know, like I definitely made note of the amount of himselfs in the closing credits.
Because Bill Murray plays himself too.
Even like Bill Murray, yeah. And of course, Bugs Bunny plays himself too.
Like, I think the only person who doesn't play himself is
Wayne Knight.
Wayne Knight, yeah.
Good old Newman.
Podolak or something?
Stan. But yeah, our lead for the movie, though, is, of course, Michael Jordan. And I will say, I don't think he was too bad. Like, his acting is surprisingly solid, especially when you consider most of his scenes were probably done with, like, a tennis ball on a stick. Like, green screen must be tough for an experienced actor, and you're throwing it at this basketball player. So, you know, not bad.
He's just such a multi-talented guy, for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I watched The Last Dance probably, like, a year ago now, and it is one of, like, the best sports documentaries I've ever seen.
Yeah,
but I never really knew anything about Michael Jordan, other than, like, his Hall of Fame induction speech, where he just seemed really angry. But anyways, I've always had that kind of impression of him as being this, like, super competitive, kind of, like, angry man. But he definitely had, like, a softer side in this movie that was kind of cool to see.
Okay, well, here's a question for you, since you've seen the documentary and I haven't. Isn't Michael Jordan known to be a gambling addict?
Yeah.
Okay, and so his line later on where he's like, let's raise the stakes, it's a little problematic, right? Okay.
I think, like, the whole gambling scandal might not have come out until after this movie, because I think it was after he made his return is when it came out.
Okay.
Yeah, like, kind of one of the I've heard this somewhere, but I think it sounds like when he has his press conference, like, he says his dad got to see him play his last game.
Yeah.
But his dad later gets murdered.
Yeah.
And there is a theory that he got murdered by people who Michael Jordan owed money to.
Oh.
In the documentary, I think it's removed from that, but I have heard rumors about that. Yeah,
they didn't shine light on that, but I have heard that theory too.
But even the golf thing with Bill, like, Michael Jordan's just notorious for, he doesn't play if there's nothing on the line.
Yeah.
So, like, he gambles, like, every time he plays golf. So yeah, it is kind of funny that he is the guy who ends up, like, raising the stakes and putting a bet on his own basketball game with the Monstars.
Yeah.
Another,
just, like, a grievance I have with this movie, in, like, the beginning and, like, basically throughout, it's, like, depicted that he's, like, a bad to average baseball player. Yeah. He, like, played, like, AA, AAA. Like, he finished baseball in AAA, which is, like, one step down from the major league. So it's, like, he was really good.
But I wonder if he ever really had that anemic, like, .238 batting average that they say he has at one point.
The thing is, you have to be very good to make it to AAA, but you have to be even that much better to make it to, like, the MLB. So it's, like, people call him a bad baseball player because I think he played one game in the MLB or something like
but
that.
But he's better than I am.
but still, to go from, he literally went from one professional sport, hadn't played baseball in years, and went to the minor leagues, basically. And did
say, like, oh, he didn't make the MLB, but he played for 2 years, and if he would have played longer and kept up the statistics that he had, he would have made the White Sox.
Could it be possible, though, that they're setting the bar at Bo Jackson? Because, I mean, Bo knows everything. So, you know, he made a more successful transition between sports than Michael Jordan did. So,
yeah, I think it's just because Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan that people just expected him to, like, go to the MLB and be the next, I don't know, Barry Bonds or whatever at the time, whoever was there at the time.
Right. Well,
so that goes back to the autobiographical question then, is, was it maybe a little easier for him because it was Michael Jordan? Because you see, like, the catcher giving him tips on what pitch is coming next. Everyone is in the crowd cheering. All his teammates are like, when I strike out, I look like garbage, but you look classy when you do it. You know, it's...
I think just the name definitely helped him get the contract.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he was anybody else, like, he had no baseball training, he was used to basketball workouts, they would not give you a second look.
Yeah. I mean, to his credit, you would have incredible pressure to succeed.
Oh yeah.
Based on that alone, because because he's such a competitive guy, he knows people are kind of just giving him the shot because of his name.
Yeah.
Where
does he live? Do you know that? With things that I was looking up, it sounds like things are in Alabama, or he talks about North Carolina a lot. But there were a lot of things, like when I get to Sponsorship Corner, Birmingham, Alabama comes up.
I know that he went to school in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So he graduated from North Carolina and NCAA, but I don't know where he actually, like, is, like, native to. Like, I know it's the U.S., but I don't know what state.
Yeah, like there's no way that Michael Jordan really lives in a house this modest. He's got to be in some sort of sprawling estate for real, right?
I know he was trying to sell his like $10 million estate, and I don't know where it was, but it was massive. Like the house he's in The Last Dance, a lot of people are saying, oh, it was just like sales work to try to get to sell the house because he's been trying to sell it for like 2 years.
Oh, okay.
He currently lives in Highland Park, Illinois, so probably close to Chicago, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
But he was born in, like, New York, and then his dad moved his family to North Carolina.
Well, see, I read that some things are true. Like, the lucky North Carolina shorts that he wears is actually something that he did.
And
really?
Yeah, and all the kids, although they're actors, they are named for his real kids, even though the kids are kind of a pointless addition to this movie. I mean, if he didn't really have kids, I'd be like, why do you put the kids in the movie?
Yeah, they definitely added nothing.
No, not at all.
Shows he's like a family man, but like really doesn't really need to be in this movie.
I feel like it's kind of a nice touch because it grounds things in reality, which was like kind of similar to Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Like this movie does a really good job of like meshing the two, like the cartoon world and the real world. But it's nice that even that it's basically like the fictionalized version of what happened between his first retirement from the Bulls and then when he returned. So I even thought that was a cool take on it to literally have it line up that way.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer for A New Legacy?
Yeah. I like saw so many Easter eggs and characters in it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, and the fact that they're going from like traditional animation to 3D animation and some is live action, and like they're throwing everything at the wall in that one, it looks like.
I like just based on the trailer, I wasn't sure about like the story, like the plot. Like I wasn't sure if I was gonna like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I will. I think I'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sold on it yet. But I mean, like, even Space Jam, for me, watching it this time around, it's a completely different movie from what I remember. There's not a ton of story. Like, I thought that the game at the end was a series. I thought there was, like, a series of games being played, not that they just played one game. Like, that's how I remember it. But there's a lot of things like that. I even remember, for whatever reason, that the basketball guys show up at the... If you would have asked me before I watched it, I would have sworn they show up at the end when he's looking for players, like they come with Bill Murray, but then they obviously don't. So I was like,
well, see, and the thing that I remembered is that I thought that the first reveal of the Monstars was at that game. I forgot about the scene earlier where they show their new form. Mm-hmm. So I thought that they were small for longer in the movie is what I thought. So I was remembering that wrong.
Yeah.
Just piggybacking on what Colin said, I definitely thought there was more gameplay in the movie.
Yeah.
I thought there was way less filler, way more gameplay.
And that one game is like 20 minutes long, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's like the final battle and endgame, just like an hour-long epic scene. But yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find it odd that they decided to animate the aliens?
Oh, as opposed to like... And 96, opposed to what?
I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking live action. They just never really acknowledge the fact that they're physiologically identical to the Toons. You know, so...
I feel like if it had been made now, the aliens wouldn't have been animated. I thought the same thing because I was just like, are they part of, like, a cartoon world as well? But right? they have to come to the Earth and drill through the Earth to get to the Toon world.
Yeah, because their whole planet is animated even. And I must say that it looks like a COVID virus when they fly over it.
I get the point. I just don't know what else they could have... Like, they could have they could have used the, like, stop motion or something.
Yeah. Guys in suits would have been too scary.
I just think if they had done it now, they would have maybe used, like, a CG or something. Or, like, a more, like, alien thing.
I just think by having it 2D, it definitely, they can do more slapstick stuff.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to the aliens, I do have to say that Danny DeVito's voice work was criminally underused.
Oh, yeah. He just has, like, a great... great voice for animation. I don't think he gets used enough. Like not even in this movie, just in general.
Oh,
in
Hercules.
I feel like he could get used a bunch.
Yeah,
he's epic in Hercules.
Yeah, and there's one more animated movie that he does. Oh, I forget which one. But yeah, he's great in Hercules.
Yeah.
Now, I find it interesting though, when speaking of voice actors, that Dan Castellaneta who is Homer Simpson, makes a cameo in the movie, but he doesn't actually have any voice role in the movie. Like, he's the one that's sitting there with Deb from Everybody Loves Raymond, Patricia Heaton, in the crowd scene of the basketball game.
Right. I actually didn't know that was him until I was, like, looking at the IMDb, and I saw he was credited as guy fan or boy, male fan or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually had no idea that was him.
I love how, like, she has the line, "Honey, I thought you said you were going to get us better seats this year." They're in the second row. How much better do you want? Come on. But it's funny because I know I watched the movie once, and then I realized that Bugs Bunny was done by Billy West, and I'm a huge Futurama fan. So when I went back and watched it the second time, I'm like, oh, I totally hear how close Bugs Bunny and Fry are when it comes to how they sound. I really love that.
Totally.
They also, Frank Welker, I think he's made an appearance on this podcast before for weird roles, but he actually plays the voice of Charles the dog.
Oh.
Or Chuck the dog, whatever his name is.
Oh, the live action dog.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's Charles Barkley is the dog's name.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the guy's name, but when they were in production, they were originally going to hire one guy to do... I wish I could find his name. He was like, he's the son of the original Bugs
Bunny.
Yeah,
Noel Blanc.
Yeah.
Yeah, Noel Blanc.
So they were going to hire him to do all 12 like animated roles, but they couldn't come to a contract agreement.
Yeah.
And so then they hired like four people to divide all the roles, or I think they hired, I can't remember, they hired a separate actor for each one instead of hiring one guy to play 12 people.
I think Billy West does two voices. I think Maurice LaMarche does three voices. I'm just trying to remember this off the top of my head. I didn't write it down. And then there were a couple more, yeah. And it's like, well, you guys should have just negotiated a better contract with Noel Blanc. I mean...
yeah.
So, okay, on the subject, though, of supporting characters, what about Stan Podolak, played by Wayne Knight? I read that Stan could have been played by Michael J. Fox, Jason Alexander, I love the Seinfeld connection, or Chevy Chase.
I like Wayne Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
He was perfect for the role. But the thing about Wayne Knight, I feel like every one of his characters is like more or less the same, like Newman, Stan Podolak, and whoever he was in Jurassic Park. I feel like he definitely has a shtick that he sticks to.
Then there was Third Rock from the Sun, too. He was the cop on that, yeah.
I just feel like he definitely always has the same like bit or shtick, and he plays it really well, though.
Yeah. I love his car with the ironic no smoking sign hanging from the mirror.
As his car smokes. <that. laughs>
But he has some great moments, though. Like, I like when he's digging up the golf course looking for Michael Jordan, and the guy comes over. What are you doing? I'm fixing a divot. Oh, he's fixing a divot! Or when he's trying to get put on the team and he says, "I'm not very tall, but I'm slow." And then, of course, the Toons have to ruin the moment with, like, "and large and a dork." Oh.
Yeah.
Or during the game when he's like, "Mouse? You picked the mouse?" But I will say, with Wayne Knight, my favorite line has to be when he picks Michael Jordan up at his motel and says, "Come on, Michael, it's game time. Get your Hanes on, lace up your Nikes, grab your Wheaties and your Gatorade, and we'll pick up a Big Mac on the way to the ballpark," even though they actually end up golfing in the next scene.
Well, that scene reminds me, like, when he's just listing off all the sponsorships, it reminds me of Wayne's World, like, "I will not bow to any sponsor."
That's right.
I thought that was pretty funny. That is a great line, though.
And just like you pointed out, that's the perfect place for Sponsorship Corner! So always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week Space Jam is brought to you by McDonald's, Subway, Piggly Wiggly, Coca-Cola, Jim Beam, Rice Krispies, Gatorade, Spalding, Wilson, and Nike Air Jordans, Sports Illustrated Magazine, Chevrolet, Nissan, and Dollar Rent-A-Car, the movies Disorderlies and Sweatin' to the Oldies, the MLB and NBA, plus the NHL team, the Chicago Blackhawks, Kodak Star Cameras, Porter Backboards, and Sears. Plus, a special shout-out to the minor league baseball teams, the Birmingham Barons and the St. Paul Saints, which Bill Murray is the co-owner of, and the Birmingham Pines Country Club. And, of course, the fictional Toontown CJ's Toys and I missed it in Roger Rabbit, Acme. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
The funny thing about the minor league baseball teams is, like, they're actually, like, real teams. Like, they're actually affiliates.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I didn't know that. Like, I always watched it, and I was like, okay, they're probably just a fake team for the movie. And then I was playing the MLB The Show video game, and I got drafted, and my player got put on the Birmingham Barons, and I was like, that's nice. Familiar. So it is a real team.
Well, nice. Yeah, and the St. Paul Saints, like I said, Bill Murray is the co-owner of them, and he's the one wearing the baseball cap for them when he's in the crowd at the last Bulls game with Larry Bird.
So he's, like, in, like, real life, he actually is a co-owner? Or...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and, oh my God, Bill Murray, come on. My God, is he hilarious.
He's one of the best comics of all time, in my opinion.
And I read that he rallied to be in this movie because when Will was last on the show back in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, he famously missed out on Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and he was so disappointed that he was like, I gotta get in this movie. He has it on his bucket list that he wanted to do an animation live action movie.
Right, yeah.
He had his vision board.
That's interesting. I was wondering why Bill Murray was in this movie. I mean, there's obviously, like, the Ivan Reitman connection, but it's just, I've heard so many stories from people talking about him on podcasts and stuff about how notoriously difficult he is to get a hold of.
Yeah.
That it's funny that he kind of does just pick and choose the movies that he wants to do, but yeah. I would have never imagined Space Jam would be one of them.
Right.
Well, and his entrance at the end, it's almost like he wasn't actually cast in the movie. He just showed up. Yeah. Da, 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 da. Right? Like, he's just like, where do I go? And then they just improvised on the spot. And then, but, and I love the running joke that he wants to be in the NBA. He's actually 6'2". I did not realize that, but, like, says that he felt short performing with Michael Jordan and Larry Bird, because who wouldn't? But
I read that that's like one of the things about this movie, because it's based on those commercials or whatever, but yeah. There are a lot of, like, commercial Easter eggs in this movie, and that is actually one of them, because apparently Bill Murray did a series of commercials where he was trying to convince people to, like, give him a spot in the NBA.
Oh my God, there are so many inside jokes in this movie. I actually have them written down. Here's some of them. I didn't even catch them all, but Charles Barkley saying he'll never date Madonna again. Bill Murray's number is number 22, which is a reference to Groundhog Day because the date is 2-2. Oh, yeah. The CJ's toy stores that I mentioned in Sponsorship Corner is for Chuck Jones, the creator of Looney Tunes. The Leon Schleissner Gym is named after the first Looney Tunes producer. Union Hall 839, where they have their meeting, is the actual Hollywood Animators Union. Like, there's Ooh. Just, there's all these Easter eggs, and it's like, oh my God. And, you know, and of course, we already mentioned it, where Ivan Reitman's a friend of his, and he has the line towards the end, my least favorite line of the movie, where he says that, you know, I knew the producer, I had a Teamster drop me off.
But yeah.
It's just like, oh, as unrealistic as this movie is, the fact that we are playing with animated characters to take us out of the reality of the situation by dropping the joke that says, you know, hey, we're in a movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, ah, oh, that's the only wasted line. And Bill Murray has all the best lines.
Yeah, I felt that too. It was too bad for sure. It just took away from the overall movie, and it definitely drew me out a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, yeah.
Like, I just love when they're golfing, you know, and he says, like, it's because I'm white, isn't it? He goes, Larry's white. Larry's not white, he's clear. Or, you know, what kind of camera is that? Just close the lens and quit pointing it at me. Or, Larry, Larry, I'm going to give us both twos back there. We were in no emotional state to putt. Oh, he was just so funny. Oh.
What did you guys think of the Looney Tunes? Like, Will, are you a Looney Tunes guy? Did you grow up with them?
Yeah, I watched them a lot as a kid, and I was a big fan, so I like them.
Yeah.
I thought they played to their strengths as characters, and I never felt that, like, their segments went on too long or were pretty dry or anything. I thought it was all pretty humorous and good. Yeah. They obviously like I said with Wayne Knight, they definitely stick to their shtick, obviously.
Well, and their animation was beautiful. Like
it was.
Especially like the transformation of the aliens. But I did read that Chuck Jones was kind of upset at the, I think it was Chuck Jones, but someone was upset about the way that it played out that Bugs Bunny would go and recruit people. Because they're like, no, Bugs Bunny would have figured his way out of it. How did these aliens get the jump on him? Which is why they shouldn't have been toons. They should have been something slightly different. I don't know what. People in rubber suits? I don't know what, but...
Yeah.
I was expecting more Bugs Bunny and more Daffy. Like, Bugs Bunny is on the poster.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It says, like, Bugs Bunny, Michael Jordan. Like, those are the two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's second in billing, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of felt like the Looney Tunes didn't get, like, obviously they have their, like, funny, and I mean, not that the movie necessarily needed to be any longer than it was, but I think you could have skipped some of the scenes of the five basketball guys.
Yeah.
And like, put a little bit more exposition on the Looney Tunes.
Like, not, like the good basketball players, the bad basketball scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and, yeah, I mean, you get into that final game, and all of a sudden, they've got, like, these little snippets. Like, just all of a sudden, they become the Harlem Globetrotters. They've got guns on the court. They've got... There's the Pulp Fiction spoof that they've got going on. They've got, like, the dynamite in the hoop. And it's just, like, they should have had a bit more of that all along. But why did they have to sexualize Lola Bunny so much?
It's the 90s.
I was going to mention that. Like, yeah. It reminded me a lot of Jessica Rabbit, just how they portrayed her.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I read that because of the Roger Rabbit deal that they made to get Warner Brothers characters in that movie, there was like some sort of gentleman's agreement that Disney would repay the favor at some point. And by the time they made this movie, all of like the top producers at the studio had left, and so they're like, no, you can't use Mickey Mouse, but they wanted to have Mickey Mouse as the referee for this final match.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah, you've seen the trailers for the new one, and they've got Hanna-Barbera characters in it and stuff like that, so
yeah.
I thought it was kind of funny that... So that's why there's so many jokes in this movie, though, slamming Disney. Like, what kind of Mickey Mouse organization would name their team the Ducks?
Yeah. I really wanted like something between Bugs and Daffy for leadership of the team. Yeah. If I could go back and remake this movie, I would introduce that a little bit.
Well, I do love when Daffy comes out though, and no one in the audience cheers. Like it's crickets and the cough. Yeah. Well, you know, every time I see the jerseys that say Toon Squad, every time I think it says Time Squad. And it just every time it catches me by surprise. It's just like the way the lettering is, I always think it looks like Time Squad. But yeah, Michael Jordan, he gets sucked down to the animated land. It's interesting how no one questions the bizarre hole-in-one that he gets. But I still love the bit where he's sucked into the ground. And I was watching because it's like the shoe gets left behind. And later on, when you see him sitting on the ground in Toonland, he's got his shoe on, and I'm like, wait a minute, did they get the continuity right? I actually had to go back and rewind, and it's like, oh yeah, no, they made sure that he lost the correct shoe. But but when they're checking him over, why is there a paperclip in his ear?
I didn't even notice.
Yeah, because Bugs is giving him the big physical, he gives him that big wet kiss. Is this real? There must have been an easier way to convince him that this is real other than wrapping your entire mouth around his face. But yeah, he checks in his ear, he's giving him the physical, and yeah, there's a paperclip sitting in there.
I wonder what that must be a metaphor for something.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I love the spit shine moment when they fix up the court as well. I will say, though, it's interesting that Baldy is what pushes Michael Jordan over the edge to help them. I read that he was actually starting to go bald around 30, and he even dropped Johnson & Johnson as a sponsor because of it. But is this a sore spot for Michael Jordan, being bald? Male pattern baldness, is this the one thing that can take down his royal airness?
I mean, he kind of embraced it, when he was bald throughout most of his career. I mean, you look good.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've honestly only known Michael Jordan bald.
Yeah, me too. I can't imagine what he would look like with hair.
Mm-hmm. Unless he just always shaved for the game and in the off season realized it was coming in splotchy or something.
Right.
Yeah, I can't picture him with hair either. I don't know if that was ever a thing.
I think probably like in college or something, he definitely had hair and then he zapped her off when he made it to the show.
Yeah. Oh, and man, when they go to 3D land, man, they just fuck up his lawn. Oh my god. But I'm wondering, again, going back to that autobiographical question, when they go to get his shorts, how many of the things in the trophy room do you think were actually, like, lent out by Michael Jordan, or were they all replicas?
I can't imagine that he would have willingly lent out his trophies.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, yeah, I mean, as competitive a guy as he is, he probably worships his trophies pretty good. So I don't think he would have willingly sent him away.
He's pretty big on legacy. I don't know that he would have risked any of his mementos.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, so into the final game. So the crowd scenes, I must say, must have been a nightmare to animate. Because, like, those stands are packed with animated characters.
Yeah.
I'd read that they filmed the game using, like, a full-on, like, green screen dome.
Yeah.
So I feel like that would have been, I don't know. I mean, now I feel like it would be so easy, but I wonder how difficult it was back then to do that kind of thing.
Well, I think it's one of these that it's like the first one that ever did it all in a green environment. You know, and now it's like, well, that's the Avengers now.
Yeah.
Okay, so the final play in the game, serious question, shouldn't that have been worth 3 points? Because the play starts at center, and even when he drops it in the basket with his super elongated arm, his feet are still behind the 3-point line.
That's fair. I don't know the official ruling on that, because I don't think it's, like, ever happened where somebody's dunked from the 3-point line. Like, I think maybe it's to be awarded 3 points. It has to be like a jump shot or so, or like a shot. Your whole body has to be over the line. That's what I would think.
I feel like I would agree with Sean. I think it should have been a 3-pointer. I also think it should have been a free throw after the buzzer for like charging.
Well, I mean, all the rules are just getting thrown out at the end there. I mean,
yeah, there are no rules.
I mean, hell, with Michael's secret stuff, we're potentially doping everyone. Like, they all think that they've been doped with this secret stuff. I know it's just water, but
yeah. But I mean, I think all rules get thrown out of the window as soon as the dynamite and guns come out. Then it's like.
That is true.
Oh, and when they're actually sharing the magic stuff, though, I like the line, you know, this goes against everything they taught us in health class, says Daffy Duck. So when the Monstars shrink again, are they naked now? And why are all the Monstars number zero? Like, why don't they have a logo?
Yeah, I don't know. I was looking at that, too. I didn't understand why they were all zero.
Yeah.
You'd have thought it would have been something to just, like, have them. Or even, are their names ever mentioned? Are any of them ever mentioned by name?
I don't think so, no.
They're mentioned by name in credits, but
yeah.
Their names aren't actually, like, physically spoken, I don't think.
Hmm.
Like, I had no idea that they're apparently called Nerdlux when they're in their small form.
Yeah.
But that's also not something that ever gets mentioned.
What Sean was saying about the naked thing, I feel like when they shrink, it would just be like Hulk shrinking. Like, his pants are huge.
Yeah, but they've got their bow ties on. So
yeah.
I like when they first get big, though, where Porky Pig is like, I be bitty bitty wet myself. But then they grow. Where do those clothes come from? Come on,
I think it's part of the talent. The talent of the basketball players that they've stolen. Because I was trying to think, they even kind of like end up looking like them, don't they?
Oh, a little bit. Like, well, one of them's shorter for sure compared to the rest of them.
Yeah, the purple one, I think it is, who's the short one.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the spines down the back, I'm pretty sure Patrick Ewing actually has spines down his back, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was like, everybody has a spine. You mean like
the Godzilla spines that grow. Yeah.
Spikes?
Yeah.
I was like, is that some sort of like a genetic malformation?
Yeah.
No, it was just a joke.
Gotcha.
Well, I mean, I will say one of the special effects I couldn't get behind is when Stan finally gets put in and he gets flattened and re-inflated. I'm not sure what to make of that effect when he's floating around.
Yeah.
The one
that was tough for me was when the Monstars, like, crumple Michael up into a ball.
Oh, that yeah, one, there's that one
too. That
one
was really rough.
Yeah, I forgot about that one, yeah.
Yeah, that one and the Stan one, they look so, like, I know it was 96, but they don't look very good.
Well, that shows why the aliens were hand animated, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I do love the moment also when he says, I need you to go get my sneakers. And they look at him and go, sneakers? And then you look at their feet and realize, oh, yeah, like none of them have normal feet. None of them would know what sneakers are.
Right.
Yeah. I did like the little animation sequence when, what's this, Danny DeVito guy, when he's telling Michael Jordan, like, what's going to happen to him if he loses, and it's like, you know, he'll have to play one-on-one with the fans, and he'll always lose. And I just thought to myself, in light of The Last Dance, that would be Michael Jordan's literal nightmare.
Yeah. Not even to lose the fans, just to lose.
Just to lose, yeah.
Did you guys wait around till the very end of the credits for the post-credit scene?
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, it's got like the Looney Tunes circle, and it's got various people fighting over who gets to say "That's all, folks."
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny says it first, and then Porky Pig's like, "That's my line," and then the aliens pop up, and then Michael Jordan walks in and says, "Can I go home now?" So, yeah, there was a little post-credit scene.
I'm gonna have to watch that.
I do feel like in real life, Michael Jordan would have been less. He wouldn't have been as nice to the Looney Tunes as he is in this movie.
Yeah,
I feel like he would have been a little hard. He's a big proponent of like tough love.
Do you think he might pop up in the sequel just as a cameo?
I was wondering that. Yeah,
doubt it. Like I think it would be fun, but I doubt they could have got him to sign on.
Like, do you think they're gonna go as hard in the cameos as they did with this one?
I mean, just from the sheer amount of, like, cameo characters in the trailer and, like, Easter eggs and stuff, I feel like it could, yeah. Like, I don't know if there'll be as much NBA talent.
Yeah.
But I think it'll definitely be, like, crossovers.
Well, and the thing that sucks is that I can look at these NBA players and it's like, okay, this is when I paid attention to the NBA. But I know that the only reason I'd know it's an NBA player is because they're taller than everyone else in the movie for like current NBA players.
Right. I'm trying to think because in the trailer, I forget who it was. There was a NBA player in the trailer who like actually was a main role. I'm going to look up the cast for Space Jam, A New Legacy.
I mean,
I feel like they've got to have like Steph Curry. I'd be shocked if he's not like in it.
Yeah. Irving and stuff. Oh, it was Anthony Davis.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it can't be an easy day of filming when you've got that many basketball players. But it must have been even harder in this movie, though, when you had to try to frame Muggsy Bogues in at the same time as all the other guys.
Right.
Yeah. They've got some very clever angles. I wonder if that's why at one point they're all in wheelchairs.
Just to even things out.
Yeah, all the other guys, I mean, they basically got their knees on their chin, but...
Yeah.
But at least they're all in frame.
Totally.
Too funny.
Anything else to add?
The movie, like I said, the movie is kind of like, it's a lot more basic than I remember being it. This is a movie that benefited from being a kid, and like your child mind filling in the blanks, and like things are so cool and like over the top. But watching it as an adult, I found it a little bit harder to get into.
And there we go. That is Space Jam. Now, Colin, Will, on IMDb, it scored 6.4 out of 10, has a Metascore of 59. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 43% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 63%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a slam dunk from half court. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer Matthew Samuel M. gave the movie 1 out of 5 stars, and he says, "Nostalgic? Sure. A staple of our generation? Sure. But a good film? Not exactly. It is horrifyingly dated, poorly written, badly paced, and at the end of the day rather pointless. One must admit, however, that it was an ingenious commercial ploy. Michael Jordan and the Looney Tunes? Brilliant, but this doesn't make it a quality cinematic experience. The only takeaway from the film is that Bill Murray can make anything better and that I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly is still as beautiful and as iconic as ever. It's unfortunate such a powerful song is associated with this failure of a children's film."
Or with a sex pervert.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I thought he was about to say.
Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer Dan M. says 2 out of 5 stars. "The Looney Tunes film Space Jam is little more than a Michael Jordan vanity project. And the sad truth is that Jordan just isn't good enough as an actor to carry this film, especially when he's sharing the screen with the likes of Bill Murray, who steals every scene he's in. Even the Looney Tunes aren't bringing their A-game here. Still, it's fun to see Bugs, Daffy, Taz, and the rest, and some of the comedy works pretty well. But the film really limits itself by writing the whole story around Michael Jordan and his return to the NBA after a short-lived baseball career. Space Jam is an entertaining piece of 90s pop culture, but it doesn't hold up.
Okay.
Mark K, 1.5 out of 5 stars. Says, Wayne Knight, Newman from Seinfeld, is the only reason why I don't give this film a half star. The story sucks, the acting is terrible, and really should have been forgotten, all caps, exclamation point.
Well, see, and I mean, like, he didn't bring up Bill Murray, so is that guy a Bill Murray hater? I mean, like,
yeah.
Wayne Knight was good, but I mean, Bill Murray was Bill Murray, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to some more positive. Anna C. gives the movie 4 out of 5 stars. This is one of my favorite movies. Probably Michael Jordan's best film. and Bill Murray's second best film. DVD is authentic. This is a great movie for kids or adults. If you're a Jordan or Bugs Bunny fan, you'll enjoy this movie. Great animation and acting. How they got all those NBA players to work on this movie is beyond me. But it sure wouldn't happen today with today's greedy owners and players.
Hashtag social commentary.
And then the last one, my personal favorite, James E., 4 out of 5 stars, says, I really enjoyed this film, and I would have awarded it 5 stars. However, I can only award this film 4 stars, as I found the character played by Daffy Duck to be unrealistic.
Okay.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Yeah. Character played by Daffy Duck.
Right on. So, yeah, we've got mid-60s from audiences, and we've got 59 and 43 from the critics. Will, let's throw it over to you. How do you feel about it on this watch?
I definitely, from my experiences with it growing up, watching it again, I've said this every single time I've been on the show, I definitely caught a little more stuff, and it definitely wasn't as solid as I remember. But that being said, it's still a solid movie, very funny. Yeah. And I would give it a confident 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know that I like Looney Tunes cartoons. I was raised on Looney Tunes cartoons. So to think of it as one big long Looney Tunes cartoon is one thing, but there's a lot more live action stuff than I remember from the last time I saw it. And so, I mean, with Colin saying that, you know, it's kind of a flimsy story, it's like, well, yeah, if you're going to watch a movie that has cartoons and humans, go watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because it is the far superior movie, but this is still fun and action-packed. So, I mean, I totally get where a 7 could come from. I don't know if I'm going to go that high personally, but, you know, it's a good 60. Yeah, maybe a 65% for me. What about you, Colin? You've got post-traumatic stress associated with this movie. And you're the one that's all along has been saying that, you know, it was a lot more basic than you remember it. Where do you fall?
Yeah, you know, like, I feel my thought on this movie is if Michael Jordan is not in this movie, it's basically like Mike. Like, it should just be a direct-to-DVD film. Like,
yeah.
It's a good... I would give it, like, a 7 out of 10 as a children's movie, and I feel like when I watched it as a kid, I liked it, but as an adult, I was like, I'll never watch this movie again. Like, there's just nothing, I just watched it and just felt like there's nothing for me here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like, there's nothing really substantial to get into. It's literally, the Looney Tunes are going to become the attraction. They get Michael Jordan to help them not be.
Yeah.
They play one basketball game. And they win. Even, like, honestly, even as a kid, I remember the reach, the stretch arm thing, being a lot more dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, having a lot more gravitas.
Yeah.
But when I watch it this time, it's over in 2 seconds. Uh-huh. He just does it, and it's done. It's not even, like, this like, kind of, like, special thing. Like, there is, like, the line that sets it up about how they're in the cartoon world, so he can do whatever he wants, but I don't know. And then similar to Will, what Will said, like, I just noticed a lot more things that took me out of the movie, almost like it the Bill Murray one is a good example. Like, what is this movie? Is it making fun of itself, or is it grounded in reality with cartoons? It's like they never really decide.
Well, yeah, because the cartoons get up and leave the screen to go to their union meeting at one point. So there is, like, this connection between, oh, what's happening on TV? Like, yeah, they're trying to make it a real subset of this world. But then to break the fourth wall like that with that one line, yeah, it's like, you're right. What is this movie? What's going on? Is this a much less offensive Blazing Saddles that we just watched? You know? I will say that at least with this movie, it's memorable. Like, no matter how long it's been since I watched it, I do remember most of what was going on. And I can't say the same thing for Looney Tunes Back in Action. I can't tell you at all what that's about.
Yeah,
you
know, so. I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're not missing out, I think.
Yeah. I thought Looney Tunes Back in Action was a show.
No, that's the one that has Brendan Fraser and Jenna Elfman in it. That's literally the only things I remember about it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think the only reason I ever heard of that movie was because it has Bill Goldberg. Yeah, so I don't know. There's nothing about this movie that really caught me or like stands out. And I was really surprised by that because it is such a like touchstone movie of my generation. Like, if I were to ask my friends about Space Jam, I can guarantee you most of them would say, like, oh, yeah, that movie is so awesome. Like, we love that movie when we were kids. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But watching it now, I would probably give it, like, a 4 out of 10.
Yeah, like, I know that the year it came out, I was in grade 12. So it's hard for me to be like, oh, yeah, I remember this from when I was a kid and everything. But I will say that I picked up on different things on this viewing. Like, it wasn't all about the cartoons when I was younger, but this viewing, I appreciated Bill Murray and Wayne Knight so much more. And like I said at the top, I mean, I could watch a movie of those five guys trying to come to grips with the fact that they've lost their talent. Sad Charles Barkley is one of my new favorites. That's all I can say.
Yeah. No, I said like that I noticed a lot more like bad stuff, but I definitely appreciated a lot more good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there we go. That is Space Jam. And that's our show for this week. A big, huge thank you to our special guest this week, Will Brisbane. Will, if people want to find you online and become part of your social media before your movie drops and get in on the ground floor of being a Will Brisbane fan, where can they find you?
All right, so you can find me on Instagram at will.brisbane, and then I'm just pulling up my Twitter to see what my username is, and then you can find me on Twitter at willbrisbane.
Yeah, so if you're a previous listener to any of our other episodes, that handle has changed because apparently he couldn't spell Hollywood, so... what was it all to make you look more professional for your studio? Is that why that...
Yeah, no, we tried to get Will Brisbane without the dot, but it was taken by this guy with 7 followers, so...
Oh, man.
But before Paw Patrol came out, the guy was at like 2 followers, so he stole 5 of my followers.
Oh. Dang. No check marks on either of you. You need that check mark, Will.
But thanks. Maybe one day.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us today.
I had a final question for Will, just because I watched the Paw Patrol trailer a few times because I was like trying to see if I could hear your voice. But then I was just thinking, I wanted to ask you, like, how cool was it to see at the end when your name shows up at the end of a movie trailer? I feel like
boom,
that would have been so
introducing
awesome.
Will Brisbane. Yeah,
I know, that was the coolest part for sure.
I know that my kids wanted me to pass on a message to you that says that they are so excited to see what Adventure City looks like since it's Adventure Bay in the series. But yeah, now we're going to the big city.
Tell them it's pretty cool. A lot of adventures to be had.
Nice.
Well, if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, tell your friends. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast. We're starting this from the ground up. We are the official rival podcast of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and we need all of your help so that we can rise up and overtake Conan O'Brien. Or if you want to go above and beyond to help us, go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say, but giving us those 5 stars helps drive us up the charts and helps us get noticed.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iselikethisone.com. There you can find links to all our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, and we have Twitter. So go on there, give us some likes, give us some shares, give us some comments. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so by email at iselikethisone@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on this show.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show, just like Joshua Blum, and donate to us, you can go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon community. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening. And join us next week for our big special episode 50, when we take a look at The Princess Bride on I Used to Like This One.